Got a bee in your bonnet? Well, we do have something that could fix that. We sat down with Ethel Villalobos of the University of Hawaii's Honeybee Project to give us the ABCs of basic beekeeping and to talk about an intensive workshop in Waimanalo that starts at the end of the month.
There's several advantages, I guess, to participate in a class like this. One is that we have equipment that you can borrow through the class. It's a six-week class. It meets 3 hours per class, so it's 18 hours of contact. And most of it, the great majority, is hands-on. So we'll be in the field. We have about 50 colonies of bees. So you'll work in small groups. You'll really get a feel for what it's like to have bees, to see them bring honey, to see them not do so well, to have to treat for diseases. So the fact that we spread out the instruction over, you know, several weeks allows you to get a good feel for the process.
So it's really a deep dive with the honeybees.
It is a deep dive, but it's an enjoyable deep dive because you also get to meet other people that are in the same kind of stage. And it's going to be me, and it's going to be my grad student, Scott. So it's a pretty lively little group with a lot of experience teaching.
So how is it that you have 50 colonies?
We have 50 colonies for research in Waimanalo, where we're going to be holding. So, and I have 4 grad students. So between all of us, we take care of these colonies. And it's really nice to have that diversity because you'll get to see strong colonies, weak colonies, colonies that are being fed to increase productivity, colonies that have a disease. So it is a very active research area, but also we want to be able to translate that research into outreach and hands-on, you know.
Now, recently we had a situation on the Big Island with the lava inundation, and that affected a number of folks that actually breed queen bees.
Yes, I guess it did. Luckily, is not as bad right now. I do have contacts on the Big Island. They did, at some point, they were getting ash over the plants, ash over the flowers. These bees have always been dealing with a certain amount of vog, which makes rain acidic. So these bees, you know, they're hardened little cookies already in the Big Island in Kona. But yes, this was an extreme situation, a prolonged situation. Queen breeders, though, on the Big Island are very attentive to their bees. They need to have very strong colonies to be able to produce queens for export and in very good health because they get monitored for a certain level of sand. You know, they have to be incredibly strong colonies and in good health. So because of that attentiveness, I think they didn't suffer as badly as, you know, a regular beekeeper.
Okay, pretty resilient community out there.
Yeah.
And so tell us, now we just had a close call with the storm, with Hurricane Hector. What happens when you have, let's say, a hurricane come through? How do you deal with that?
Well, there's the immediate. For example, what we do usually is we go and strap our colonies. We actually put big seat belts, kind of. We tie them all together. I mean, each colony is made of several boxes. So we try to tie them, those boxes together, and the weight of those colonies, it can be 200 pounds, you know, so they usually stay in place. Our biggest concern is trees nearby, that a branch can fall and, you know, there's not much you can do. And then also the next couple of days, if it's really rainy or really windy, they may be not able to go forage. So if there were stressing, we might feed them afterwards. But in general, tying them down with a basically one of those heavy-duty straps does the trick. Recently, with all the climate change and all the changes in rainfall patterns and everything, we've been noticing that bees are going through times of basically very low food availability for them. So one of my grad students has been working on trying different combinations of pollen and artificial pollen that has a lot of protein and some basically sugar water to keep them afloat so that when conditions improve, they can pick up and be in better shape rather than let them use up all their reserves and be very weak when the good times come. So we're working basically on that diet modification to try to basically pass information to beekeepers and to make them aware that you can do this manipulations safely to get the bees in good shape throughout the year.
Right, just to supplement their diet, mm-hmm. if yes. it will, just to make them, giving them their daily vitamins.
No, and it is super important because it is through their diet that their immune systems pump up. So diseases are less likely to take hold in the colony if you're well fed. So it is crucial that you keep basically a fat bee. A fat bee is a happy bee, is a healthy bee. So, you know, if I were a bee, I would be in good shape. So,
okay.
But it really is a good thing for them to have that nutrition and that diversity. So even though the supplements are not ideal, maybe in variety, they will keep them afloat until they can, you know, encounter more natural food that is best for them.
Right. We hear stories about, oh, there's pesticide in the honey. I mean, well, how do you view that?
Bees are a sponge and collect and get in touch with a lot of chemicals that you want and some that you don't, I suppose, in the fields. However, honey production is actually, they do filter a lot of things. Actually, the poor things filter a lot of things in their own bodies. Basically, I have done studies in the honey in Hawaii, and basically it's come out mostly clean, by and large clean, much more than you would in the mainland. And that has made me very happy. Recently, there was a report of some pesticides in Kauai, and that is a concern. I guess we always want to keep our eyes open where the bees are placed. If it were my call, I guess I would basically put out sentinel hives in areas that I think are prone or that I know are being sprayed with something and sample them regularly to see if indeed is what it is, if it's happening, rather than take honey from, you know, a store in a shelf that you don't know how old it is or how it was collected, because chemicals can be in the wax, and from the wax it can pass to honey. So, you know, the way into which chemicals can get to honey is diverse. It can be that the flowers were contaminated, or it can be that the wax in which they stored the honey was contaminated. So you got to be really careful about how you interpret some of these results. But I would recommend that if anybody has concerns, that a more controlled study be done with sentinel hives and, you know, near production areas or other areas that are problematic with pesticides to confirm and determine how, if this is happening and how it's happening.
And sometimes I've seen honey, it's like organic honey, but what does that mean?
There's organic and there's raw honey and there's regular honey. The organic requires that a honeybee colony is situated far away from anything that could potentially be sprayed.
Mm-hmm.
So there is a distance, a radius that is protected, and which you can, the beekeeper needs to certify that it's surrounded, say, by forest, and there's no pesticides there. So people in some areas of Molokai have organic honey because they weigh on one side of Molokai and they're completely surrounded by native vegetation, so they can do that. The other honey, the raw honey, is honey that the beekeeper can tell you that they themselves have not used any chemicals for medicines, antibiotics, or other kinds of medicines to alter the honey, that they have not added anything, that is pure honey. Now, of course, you can't guarantee, you know, you can't interview, you know, bee number 358 where it went, so there's a chance that the bee did encounter some pesticides. However, like I said, honey tends to be among the cleanest things in the hive.
Just because there's natural filters.
It's naturally filtered, and a good beekeeper will keep their combs, their wax combs, be replacing them regularly. So pesticides get, in a sense, removed out of the hive. The beekeeper has a good management system.
Because I often hear, too, like if I'm an urban beekeeper, you might be exposed to more household stuff that people are using in the gardens, and they don't know how to apply it. And
I think there's a lot, and we do go over this in the class, too. Like, there's a lot of education that needs to be passed on to the backyard beekeeper and farmer, because there's people who keep, you know, fruit trees who keep, and they just go crazy with a spray bottle, you know, and there's a lot less control sometimes to what they're using than compared to farms that need to meet certain requirements, have spray schedules, and, you know, may be supervised.
Right. But all that folks will be able to learn in this Beekeeping 101.
Oh, yeah. Yes. So it's a very broad everything from the hands-on, how do you build a box for the bees, where do you get the materials, what is the life cycle about bees, you know, what are the flowers that in Hawaii are good for bees and some that are not so great, and a whole array of things. And again, this is why we use the six-week period, because we'll be able to see problems and successes in the field. And I think that's super valuable. And we're hoping to be able to offer a part two eventually.
That was Ethel Villalobos of the Honeybee Project at the University of Hawaii. For more information on this story, check out our webpage at hawaiipublicradio.org.